As a top leader, it's likely that the challenges and opportunities you face also come with grueling hours and high expectations. Now, it's natural to assume you're resilient. However, our guest, Dr. Marie-Hélène Pelletier, says,
resilience is not a given. You need a strategy.
Find out more. Join us for episode 303 of Growth Igniters Radio with Pam Harper and Scott Harper.
This episode is brought to you by Business Advancement Incorporated, enabling successful leaders and companies to accelerate to their next level of success. On the web at businessadvance.com. And now, here's Pam and Scott.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Pam Harper, founding partner and CEO of Business Advancement Incorporated. And right along with me is my business partner and husband, Scott Harper.
Hi, everybody. It's wonderful to join you again. And as always, our purpose here is to spark new insights, inspiration, and immediately useful ideas that can help visionary leaders accelerate themselves and bring their companies along to their next level of game-changing innovation, transformation, and growth. Now, if you're like many of the top leaders we speak with, it's likely you're moving at warp speed to anticipate and respond to all the opportunities and challenges you face. You also probably have a can-do attitude that enables you to take on tough issues and do whatever it takes to exceed expectations.
Now, we all know resilience is important.
Absolutely.
And it's natural to assume that we are resilient, right? But this isn't necessarily the case. In fact, as we've discussed in earlier episodes, it's easy for anyone, and especially those who are good at their jobs, to go into burnout mode and not even recognize it.
That's right.
That's why we're glad to be speaking today with Marie-Hélène Pelletier, PhD, MBA, also known as MH. Her new book, The Resilience Plan, A Strategic Approach to Optimizing Your Work Performance and Mental Health, was released in February 2024, and we were thrilled to be part of that launch team. That was great. Throughout her career in business management and psychology, MH has spearheaded a dialogue on the crucial issues of leadership resilience and workplace health. Drawing on her extensive background in corporate, insurance, governance, and public sectors, she brings national and international perspectives and expertise on mental health and resilience as a key pillar of overall health. MH is also a bilingual practicing psychologist with over 20 years of experience in clinical psychology and advisory workplace psychology. She holds a PhD and an MBA from the University of British Columbia. MH is a member of the Global Clinical Practice Network of the World Health Organization and past director of the boards of the Canadian Psychological Association and the International Association of Applied Psychology. She's presented and authored and co-authored all kinds of industry and academic publications, has won numerous awards academically and in the industries. You can read much more about MH's background by going to growthignitersradio.com, episode 303, and scrolling down to resources. MH, welcome to Growth Igniters Radio.
Such a pleasure to be here with you both, Pam and Scott.
It's been a long time coming. We've known about this book for a while. You've been busy helping people to learn more about the resilience plan. And we have taken deep dives on this book numerous times because it resonates with us and so many of the people that we work with. So let's start out by talking about what inspired you to write your book, The Resilience Plan.
Yes, it's a combination. People thing at some point, things like people I worked with individually in my executive coaching work or in my speaking work saying, it is so great that I have this now moving forward. It's going to change how I approach my resilience much more strategically. And I wish I knew this earlier. So hearing this on and on sort of at some point made me think, how could I reach even more people sooner, more proactively? So that's one of the ways. And then there are reasons why I did that specific book. But overall, it was an intention to just reach more people more proactively.
And I think that what's also interesting about your book is that it's very personal. you can learn a lot when you're reading it from the outside, but you're not afraid to go and share your own experiences. And that's meaningful. I mean, I think we all are subject to these issues. None of us are above it, and we all have to find our way through it.
But we don't necessarily want to admit it. And we're talking about, Pam and I, at the beginning, successful people get successful by being successful, by being talented, by being driven. And if I get a chance to take on more, I'll take on more because that will advance my career and help other people. But you make it very clear in your book that all of this, you know, I can do it. I'm strong and I'm tough and I can get through it. That can really be a danger. It can contribute to burnout. And that has huge consequences, not only for the individual, but for the organization.
That's right. It can put us at risk. And back to your comment, Pam, about the book being personal in a number of ways. Exactly. I had to put some of these examples in because otherwise it would have not resonated with my reader. If I want to take a reader who's a professional, a leader of any level from point A to point B in this book, I needed to do this part. Otherwise, they would have brushed it off. And so, and that's the reason why it was so important. It was not easy or natural. It's not usually where I go to convince someone. I'm more on the research and the logic side of things, but that's that reason. But exactly, Scott, what tends to happen mostly is that earlier in our careers, first decade or so, what happens is we are taking on more. We're saying yes. And you know, if we ended up in a successful place, but a few decades later, it usually is because we did approach things this way at an earlier point and it worked. It had benefits. It did not lead us to burnout. We were going through all these things. And then people sometimes get to me in their late 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and they're saying, MH, I don't know what's wrong with me. I have been saying yes to everything, getting things done, going through challenges all my career. There's nothing different right now, really. So what's my problem? And often part of what happens, and it varies, of course, each context is different, but high level, in first decade, there were naturally occurring protective factors. The actual amount of demands was a bit lower. The factors that were protecting us were a bit higher. We naturally had more friends around. We're more active. We were more outside. There and other things as well. And then as things keep going, we get more unexpected, larger demands. Many we welcome and are excited about, but they're still demands. Some that we would probably prefer not to have, but we're still dealing with them. And then the other protective factors are gone, and we are not deliberately paying attention to them. And that's where we're getting at risk.
And of course, in addition to what's going on at work and the career, there's everything else that goes on in your life. Illness, yes. and family stresses. And
things you may never have faced before.
Pandemics, for goodness sake.
Right.
This only has to heap on the challenges.
It does. And emotions don't have a lane. You know, sometimes it's almost like we approach, especially as things progress in our careers, of course, there is a degree of boundary between our professional life and our personal life. That's healthy, normal, perfectly good. But sometimes we almost operate as if the demands on the personal side are there, or I'm really stressed on my personal life and I'm doing great on the professional side. And really, it's all in the one person, which means we can't separate them to that degree when we're looking at our overall resilience.
So when it does come to resilience, I mean, I've hired any number of people when I was in corporate and helped others to hire as well at that time. And always people would say, let's make sure that that person has resilience, like it's a qualification, it's a trait or something like that. You talk about it very differently. Tell us more about how you see resilience.
Yes. And what you probably named it this way at the time, what you were probably actually looking for is someone that was really the right fit for this role. It was called that. But the reality of resilience itself is that it's not a personality trait. It's not how we are. It's not who we are. It's a state. It is, we know from research, connected with some personality traits like optimism, for example. So if we tend to be more optimistic in general as a person, we may in general have a slightly higher baseline of resilience, but even then it's going to go up and down. And so overall, what it means is we can influence it. And so many definitions, but one that many are working with, and I am as well, is our ability to go through adversity and come out even stronger. So there's a learning, a growth component here. The other aspect that's important is that the adversity we're talking about, you referred to it, could be chronic, like a pandemic, could also be very acute, like an event. And often we're doing both at the same time, right, in multiple ways.
So I think it's refreshing and relieving to know that this isn't an innate trait, but something that one develops. Now, you've also said to us in previous conversations that you think that a resilience plan is good business. Why do you think that?
Because if we're turning a bit more our attention to the professional side of our lives, the amounts of demands will be high, and often we actually welcome them, right? We've been seeking these additional demands. They're exciting for most of us at most times, and we have what it takes to meet these challenges. So that's all fantastic. However, if we have not paid attention to our resilience in a strategic way, we can talk more about what I mean by this here, but if we don't do this, we will actually not be able to bring our best to this or these challenges. And if we just try to put our head down and keep going, really, we will get at a point where you cannot will yourself to be resilient or wing it. It's just not going to be there for you. It will have an impact, not just on your overall well-being and psychological health, which the psychologist part of me would say, yes, it's worth it. But it's also going to impact your performance. You're going to hit your brand. You're going to hit what the reputation you've taken by now, a couple of decades building. And so lots of very important reasons. And that's why I say it's good business if you pay attention. Otherwise, you're hurting your own overall business.
And not only are you hurting yourself, you can be hurting others around you. Morale is infectious. And if my morale drops, the people around me may not know what's going on, but they may be picking up, well, something's wrong. In fact, years ago when I worked in corporate, my parents were very ill. And one of the people who reported to me said, "Why are you mad at me?" "What? I'm not mad at you." "Well, you're always frowning." And I said, "Oh, well, it's not you." I had to think about how I was coming across to others.
It's all very related. And that's a great example, what you're describing. Others, I think most of us have gone through various versions of this. And it's important to name it, because sometimes as leaders, we have such a really good intention that we confuse our intention with how we probably appear. So you were intending to remain your fabulous leader self. And, oh, well, not exactly. And so it's very important to keep this in mind, because the reality is that as leaders, to be good leaders, we're going to need a lot of energy, a lot of resilience, to pay attention to emotions of others, to convince others, to influence others. And so all this demands energy. It also brings energy, right? So it's good for the leader's mental health to be doing these things, but doing these things also demands on their psychological health. And will even more as we move forward with AI coming into our work.
Okay, well, that's a good place for us to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll discuss taking a strategic approach to developing a resilience plan with M.H. Pelletier, PhD, MBA. Stay with us.
This is Growth Igniters Radio with Pam Harper and Scott Harper. We're brought to you by Business Advancement Incorporated. That's us, actually. And we're on the web at businessadvance.com. Now, as always, we focus on enabling visionary CEOs and C-suite leaders to accelerate the momentum it takes to achieve game-changing innovation, transformation, and growth.
Well, Scott, here we are. We're in our 10th year of Growth Igniters Radio.
That's right.
Hard to believe. We have been receiving more top podcast awards, including the 2023 PopCon Award for Best Business, Marketing, and Tech Podcast. And we are so thrilled to be listed as one of the top 125 podcasts to listen to through Thinkers 360 Thought Leaders. Listeners tell us they enjoy our conversations with visionary CEOs and thought leaders like M.H. Pelletier, who are changing the face of business. They also really enjoy our Pam and Scott Quick Take episodes.
Now, if you're enjoying listening to this podcast, spread the good word and become a recommender. Open Growth Igniters Radio on whatever podcast app you use and write a review. And feel free to share links to your favorite episodes on your social media. It really makes a difference.
Welcome back to Growth Igniters Radio with Pam Harper. That's me. And Scott Harper. Today, Scott and I are speaking with M.H. Pelletier, PhD, MBA, author of the book, The Resilience Plan, about why developing a strategic resilience plan is good for you and for your business. M.H., tell us how people can find out more about you, your book, your speaking, your advisory, everything you.
TheResilienceplan.com. So it gets you to the book, my website, me, what I do. So theresilienceplan.com.
Okay. And you can find out more information and links for this episode by going to growthignitersradio.com, episode 303, and scrolling down to resources. In the first segment, we spoke about the fact that top leaders, just like everybody else, can be subject to burnout and not even realize it, which is serious. We assume that resilience is a trait, but MH has made very clear is not. It is something you develop, and you develop it strategically. So let's go dig deeper. MH, can you tell us a brief story about a top leader who strategically designed and implemented a custom resilience plan?
Yes, yes, we can. So actually, when I started writing the book, sometimes one of the things you'll do is have groups of people go through the book and provide feedback and all. And one of the individuals that was there, leader in her organization, did the workshop, did everything, provided the feedback, and that was that.
Let's start with what led the person to do this, because most people do not say, let me sit down and do this. We want them to.
Well, that was probably that particular situation was probably a bit of a biased sample. I guess there was an interest because I had put the word out in my newsletter that I was doing this. It was someone perhaps a bit interested in the overall topic. What I'm seeing is more and more leaders will not necessarily think that they need it for themselves right now, but they do recognize that people in their team need it. And they would agree that it could be useful for them, but mostly they're doing it for others. And as they go through this process, if nothing else, to model the process, to model the attention to this important aspect of our competency at bringing our best to what we do, sometimes that's the main reason. I think for her, that probably was the main reason. She did not come at it saying, I need this, I'm in trouble. It was more, I'm doing great, I love what I'm doing. I do realize at times it's extremely demanding, and I'm going to do this to see if there's something in it for me. I think that's probably how she approached it. And she did do all the exercises in the first workshop. What's fascinating is she valued this so much that she then invited me 3 months later to actually do a workshop with her teams of leaders within her organization, traveled in person, did the whole thing. She was there and said hello at the beginning, but then really sat at the back of the room. And then after she came to me and said, MH, here's what happened. I sat there thinking I would just re-listen to the same thing and let my group benefit from it. But because I was there, I thought, I'm actually going to go with this flow. And she realized 3 months later that her plan from 3 months ago had been implemented. Her context has changed. And she was ready for the update of her strategic plan, which was such a neat illustration of exactly how this worked. Just like in business, right? You create a strategic plan, you evaluate it on over time, and as context changes, you update it. And so that's an example of someone who went through this process. It represents exactly the path, really.
It's interesting that you mention that people do it for others. I've seen a lot of things done for others, and that's natural and it's good. Because if you can think about other people, you're part of that interaction. I think it's very healthy.
It's easy to see that maybe somebody else outside of yourself may be struggling or could be more resilient because we're in ourselves and we tunnel and we pay attention to the stuff outside of us. We don't necessarily pick up on it. So how could I pick up on maybe my resilience has to increase a little bit?
I know. And thank you for asking this, because the way to think about building your resilience plan, similar to in business, we don't just build a resilience plan when we're in trouble, or a plan, it won't be a resilience, but a strategic plan when we're in trouble. We usually will build a strategy if something new needs to happen, a new product launch, a new service, something, an initiative needs to happen. And we take the time to not just jump in, but look at the context here, who else is offering this service? What forces could impact it now or in the future? The whole context. And then we build a plan on how, therefore, we're going to bring what we're bringing this time. And so it's the same idea here. It's not out of having a problem. It's out of realizing that our resilience is what's going to allow us to bring our best. So even if it's 10 out of 10 right now, we can still, and should, I would argue, build a strategic resilience plan to keep it as high as possible, such that we hit all these upcoming demands from the highest baseline. And so to your point, Scott, then, so we could, regardless of where we are, whether my resilience is high, medium, low right now, still do the whole process. It's good, proactively. But in order to, if we wanted to increase self-awareness to actually, because I could be fooling myself thinking that I'm a solid 10 out of 10 and, you know, things are great. So it's about paying more attention in a more realistic way. And in the book, I talk about various exercises, but even at a super easy level, something that we could all do literally starting tonight, is you print out a calendar from the internet and you post it somewhere you visit every night, where you brush your teeth, for example, post it there, and have a pen not too far. And every night you just rate on a 0 to 10 scale, how was my energy level today? Okay. And you avoid just the 10 and zero. Try to really be realistic. It's going to be like 9.7, 9.2, 8.5, 9, 8, 7.5, 7, 6.5. So what's going to happen now is, of course, it's you're going to say, oh, is it a valid tool and all this? It's going to be internally valid because it's always you rating it, but it will allow you, and it will take you seconds. So it's not a I don't have time situation. It'll take you seconds, but to catch it a bit sooner if it's sliding down, right? So that's one of the ways you could pay attention in a more proactive way.
On a related note, you also talk a lot about context. Can you briefly tell us what context means to you and how it applies to developing a strategic resilience plan?
Yes. It's basically carrying here in our resilience plan the same tools we would use in business when we're building a strategy, where we're looking even at a SWOT analysis, looking at strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, where we're looking at what forces in the market could be influencing what we're doing. So here in our context, the reality is that, especially post-pandemic, we've heard, yes, if I could spend whatever, 3 hours a day doing exercise, yoga, seeing friends, making great salads, whatever, that would be probably very good. And it would. Research actually would back this up. The reality is, for many people, the context of our lives is that there isn't 3 hours a day available for us to do all these things. So we do nothing. And what we're doing in creating a plan is we're looking at your values. We're looking at your sources of supply and demand. We're looking at your context, doing a SWOT analysis for you, such that instead of saying, well, I don't have 3 hours, so I do nothing. Wait a second. I do value health. I do have all of these demands with which I could burn out if I just keep going. I am in a context where I live at a place where, yeah, I could actually step outside and go for a 5-minute walk. That's good. And other aspects, right? So then you're taking the reality of your context into account such that you can actually, in your plan, say something very realistic, not the wish, realistic, that connects with this context. So what was, oh, I'll go to the gym five times a week for an hour, becomes, I will do one set of 10 push-ups once a week before my breakfast. Super small, not life-changing, not overall health-changing, but a concrete action that is realistic to implement. And what we know is when you start this, number one, right away, it feels good. You made a plan that was realistic that can actually be implemented, but it increases your sense of self-efficacy.
Mm-hmm. So one context is not the way it is. Everybody has their own. And that's one of the ways we can start to begin to develop that personal customized resilience plan. Well, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, Scott and I will speak more with workplace mental health expert and leadership psychologist, M.H. Pelletier, PhD, MBA, and author of The Resilience Plan. And we'll be talking about immediately useful ideas, even more than we already had, for designing and developing a custom resilience plan. Stay with us.
You are listening to Growth Igniters Radio with Pam Harper and Scott Harper. We're brought to you by Business Advancement Incorporated, where we focus on enabling visionary leaders to dramatically increase momentum for game-changing results. We're on the web at businessadvance.com.
Have you ever wondered, if so many CEOs think it's important to lead for business transformation and long-term growth in this rapidly changing world, why can it be so challenging to break the orbit of the status quo? As an author and advisor to visionary CEOs who often face mysterious pushback to their big ideas, that was the question that sent me on a long search for answers. So what's the secret of the great leaders, the successful visionary leaders I call growth igniters, the ones who are able to ignite game-changing business growth over and over again? What's their secret? They're able to anticipate and embrace the hidden leadership dynamics that can naturally emerge in uncharted territory. How do they do this? Well, that's what I share in my keynote, Break Orbit, Achieving Long-Term Growth in a Short-Term World.
Go to PamHarperSpeaks.com today to find out more about Pam's keynote and her availability to speak at your next leadership conference or executive retreat.
Welcome back to Growth Igniters Radio with Pam Harper and Scott Harper. Over the last two segments, Scott and I have been speaking with M.H. Pelletier, PhD, MBA, and author of The Resilience Plan, about taking a strategic approach to developing a resilience plan. M.H., remind us again how people can find out more about you, your book, your speaking, everything else that can help them learn how to develop their resilience strategically.
Thank you, Pam. It's theresilienceplan.com. So theresilienceplan.com leads to everything that I do. Thank you.
And again, you can find more information and links for this episode by going to growthignitersradio.com, episode 303, and scrolling down to resources. So we are at the part of the episode where we talk about three immediately useful and practical ideas for designing and developing, in this case, a custom strategic resilience plan. Now, we're going to talk about these one at a time. You already gave us one, so we get four in this episode. What's another idea that somebody could start doing as soon as they're done listening to this episode?
Yes, I would say you write down your values. So what's most important for you in life? And you're going broad, personal, professional, all together. Don't worry about, is this an actual value? If you value mountains, sure, mountains go on the list. It's fine. And that's an exercise often as leaders, if we've worked with coaches, if we've done self-exploration or journaling or whatever, that's something that many of us have done. So don't just say, oh yeah, I know what they are, like whatever. Put them in front of you on paper. That distance will make it easier to think. And in towards getting to creating your own strategic plan, you will have a few things written down. So just taking a moment to write it down is good. If you need a bit more time, because no, you have not revisited that recently, then take that time. The plan will work if it's customized. And the way to make it personal and customized is to start from your values. There's no other way.
Customize it. Okay.
Okay.
What is a second immediately useful idea that people can use to develop their custom resilience plan?
Yes. And this one, I have to say, most people love this particular step. They're all important in my heart, but the second one, for a lot of people, does it. It does a lot of it. Simple. Again, I only went for things that were simple, knowing how overwhelmed and busy we all already are. Table, two columns. On the left, your sources of demands, and on the right, sources of supply. And we're looking at now what's important on this exercise for it is, to be useful is you need on the demand side to write the demands from both personal and professional. You need to write the demands you want, like a great promotion you just got, and those that you don't, like co-parenting with someone who's right now is a bit difficult, whatever. It all goes there. Because part of what happens is successful professionals and leaders are optimistically biased. I ask them, what are your demands? And they just list the one big project they have at work right now. Not realistic, right? Even demands that are positive, demands you've been wanting, demands on the personal side, they all need to be there. Otherwise, you won't have a realistic perspective. Otherwise, it's as if you're saying, sure, I want to look at the financials, but I'm only going to look at, say, one line of the financial statements. Well, no.
What I hear you saying is that we are all one person. We're not the work person. And then the personal side is separate because all those demands, as you're talking about, come into play. So if I'm just putting down one big work project and go, everything else, forget about that. That's my personal life. No.
Have to do the budget and walk the dog.
Yeah. No. But you I do. Also have friends and maybe we're planning some kind of big party. That can be exhausting too and take up a lot of time. Even yes. when I want it.
Exactly.
You also talked about supply. Oh, that's right. What does that mean?
Same. Here, same meaning, you also need to be very realistic there. It's your sources of energy. And again, now people get on this side and they really aim at getting on their stationary bike 3 times a week. And then I say, how many times in the past 2 weeks? Oh, well, the past 2 weeks have been very busy, so no. But in general, well, then it doesn't go on the list. We're looking for things that you're actually doing. And that's here now. See what's how it what happens. Now they realize the amount of demands they're facing and how little there is of recovery here on the supply side. And then, especially if they've done the list of values first, again, what also happens is now these two are clashing. Often family or friendships or relationships will be part of this list here, or it could be other ones. But, and then seeing how this is not aligned already pushes people towards, oh, maybe I'm going to make different choices. So that's another action to consider.
Well, let's go to idea number 3, immediately useful.
Then I would say this one, you need a bit more time, not extreme. But if you're familiar with the SWOT analysis that we do in business here, a version of this, I modify the language a bit because it's not exactly that. But from an internal perspective, so you could create the 4 quadrants. Internal perspective, looking at what naturally makes it easy for you to be resilient. For example, I love exercising. I actually like it. Okay. Internally, that makes it challenging to increase my resilience. I tend to say yes. Like if something fantastic comes through, I just want to say yes to it. Okay. And I would list more things. I'm just giving you examples. On the external side, something that helps me be resilient could be that we have a workplace that have been very clear on boundaries on emails. So it's external to me, but it helps with my resilience. Okay. And then on the external side, not so helping so much, could be the fact that say I live in an area where I cannot just step outside and go for a walk. I would have to drive to be able to go somewhere to walk. That's external, personal context, but external, and it's challenging. So doing this analysis also then, again, brings me to a more realistic perspective on what's my actual context now. And you see how it could change over time, but right now, this is where it is. That clarity, again, is another way to increase my chances of making choices for my next steps that are more likely to be implementable.
The operative word here, in a way, is making those choices. Choices are the key.
Yes. A lot of it, and when we say choices, already we're connected more with a more deliberate approach, as opposed to the wave is coming. We're just trying to get keep our head out of the water. Sometimes it goes under, but whoop, it comes outside and whoops, it's the end of the day and start again tomorrow. So yes, when we have a strategic plan, there is a direction. There are tactics. So in the plan, you get to strategic pillars, you get to tactics. So it helps guide the choices you will make in a deliberate way. Yes.
And it also helps you feel like you have agency. You're not helpless.
Yes.
You aren't being covered with the wave all the time. You get some floaties or something like that. So
it does.
Agency helps.
Agency is critical. We need it.
Okay, well, we could go on for quite a while here. It is such an important conversation, but we are at the end of the episode. Can you leave us with some final thoughts about taking a strategic approach to developing resilience?
Yes, I would say keep in mind that we've covered the key things. I would say pay attention to how you're doing. However you're checking in with yourself, you're asking your team members to do it, walk that talk. Then you've used strategic planning in your work. It actually, as we know, is not the five-day endeavor that sometimes we think it's going to be. It can be done in a much shorter way. And with it, that's a bit of what I've tried to do in this guide. You could literally fly from one coast to the next in one continent and get out of the plane with your plan. And I would say stay curious. Pay attention to the opportunities in your context to make changes that will lead to more resilience in a strategic way.
Okay. Well, MH, thank you so much for being our guest on Growth Igniters Radio.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much to both of you.
It's been a pleasure for us as well, MH. And you out there, thanks for listening to Growth Igniters Radio with Pam Harper and Scott Harper. To contact us, get show notes and resource links for this week's episode, go to growthignitersradio.com and select episode 303.
Until next time, this is Pam Harper
and Scott Harper
wishing you continued success and leaving you with these questions to think about and discuss with your team. First one's for you. What can I start doing right now to begin to mindfully develop a strategy and plan for increasing my own resilience? The second one's for you with your team. What can we begin to do as an executive team to begin to increase resilience in our workplace?
Growth Igniters and Growth Igniters Radio with Pam Harper and Scott Harper are registered service marks of Business Advancement Incorporated. All Growth Igniters Radio episodes are copyrighted productions of Business Advancement Incorporated, intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other uses, including copying, editing, redistribution, and publication without prior written consent of Business Advancement Incorporated, are prohibited. All rights reserved.